foods. But if you eat them expecting to get full, it will often take massive quantities. And you might also find yourself on the prowl for something more substantial to top off the meal. That's where having a balanced snack or meal, which includes a heavier carbohydrate, some protein, and/or some fat, is especially helpful if you're looking for a little staying power or the stick-to-your-ribs kind of feeling from eating. If, on the other hand, you know you will be going out for a fabulous dinner or to a party and want just a little something to take the edge off your hunger, lighter foods may serve your purpose just fine. Foods with staying power. Snacks or meals with a little fiber, complex carbohydrates, some protein, and some fat will help increase satiety. Ironically, many of our chronic dieters shy away from the very foods that could help them feel more satisfied at meals, complex carbohydrates and fat. Here are some common unsatisfying food choices and suggestions for how you can round them out to be more satisfying. There's nothing inherently wrong with these light foods. They just may not provide staying power. Less filling food, salad. No carbohydrates, little protein, unless it's an entree. Staying power boost. Add these types of foods to perk up your satiety. Protein, tuna, chicken, garbanzo, or kidney beans. Carbs, crackers or whole grain roll. Fat, salad dressing. Less filling food, fresh fruit. No protein. Can be low on carbs depending on quantity. Staying power boost, protein, carb, fat, cheese and whole grain crackers, half sandwich, non-fat yogurt. Less filling food, turkey breast, no fiber, no carbs, no fat. Staying power boost, carb, fat, whole grain pita, whole grain bagel, whole grain crackers, mayonnaise. What if you can't stop eating? If you discover after time that you are still eating, even though you are not hungry, there's a good chance that you might be using food as a coping mechanism. This is not always as obvious and dramatic as some magazines and books suggest. Chapter 11 is devoted to this issue. What if you feel there's something missing? If you've discovered what it feels like to feel comfortably full, and yet feel that something is missing, it could be the satisfaction factor. This is so important, we've devoted a whole principle to it, and discuss it in the next chapter. Chapter 10. Principle 6. Discover the satisfaction factor. The Japanese have the wisdom to promote pleasure as one of their goals of healthy living. In our fury to be thin and healthy, we often overlook one of the most basic gifts of existence, the pleasure and satisfaction that can be found in the eating experience. When you eat what you really want in an environment that is inviting, the pleasure you derive will be a powerful force in helping you feel satisfied and content. By providing this experience for yourself, you will find that it takes much less food to decide you've had enough. So what is it about satisfaction that is so powerful? Abraham Maslow has told us that we are driven by our unmet needs. We want what we can't have, and we'll do whatever it takes to calm down the sense of deprivation that inevitably arises when our needs are not satisfied. Whether it is food, or relationships, or career. If we're not satisfied, we're not happy. In the 17 years since intuitive eating was first published, it has become more evident that finding satisfaction in eating is the driving force of this process. We explain this to our clients by describing the following visual. Imagine a wheel with many spokes. At the hub is satisfaction, surrounded by 10 spokes. Each spoke represents an intuitive eating principle that influences satisfaction. To be satisfying, a meal includes foods that you enjoy and that hit the spot. Eating a salad when you want a steak will not lead to satisfaction. If you are served an appealing food or whole meal when you're not very hungry, your satisfaction will be diminished. You may eat anyway, but food tastes much better when you're moderately hungry. Conversely, if you eat when you're ravenous, your taste buds will barely have a chance to register the exquisite tastes before you've bolted down the entire meal. Definitely not a satisfying experience. But when you begin to eat a delicious meal when you are moderately hungry, you are likely to find that you're comfortably full before the meal is finished. If you finish eating the whole meal, there will be diminished taste to the food because the taste buds become desensitized to the nuances of the food, especially if you become overfull. Now think about eating when you're in the middle of a fight with a family member. How delicious is the food you eat during that meal? You may not even notice that you've eaten. Or think about an experience you've had when you've eaten to push down feelings. Again, not a very satisfying eating experience. Honoring your hunger, making peace with food, feeling your fullness, and coping with your emotions without using food are four of the spokes on our imaginary wheel. Another spoke on the wheel involves rejecting the diet mentality. If you're still in diet mentality when you eat, it's likely that you're either not choosing the most satisfying food, or if you do choose it, you are judging yourself for eating it. Respecting your body is yet another spoke on the wheel. Eating while you're wearing comfortable clothes and eating without body bashing will free you to have more satisfaction in your meal. Challenging the food police, who chastise you for what you eat, or for even eating at all, will also allow for optimal satisfaction. Later in this book, you will learn more about how exercise and nutrition fit into intuitive eating, but suffice it to say that a person who feels good moving or exercising will also find that eating in a satisfying way will enhance this self-satisfaction. And when you're at a point in this process that you're craving all types of food, nutritious food along with the play food, see Principles 9 and 10, your eating satisfaction level will be at its peak. You may be taking a leap of faith when you give up diet mentality and jump headfirst into intuitive eating. If you're looking for the motivation to make this transition, think of finding satisfaction in your everyday eating experiences. After all, who wouldn't want to live a satisfying life that is built on a foundation of eating satisfaction? This chapter will crystallize finding satisfaction for you. How many times have you eaten a rice cake when you really wanted potato chips? And how many rice cakes, carrots, and apples have you eaten attempting to get the same satisfaction you would have found with a handful of chips? If you feel truly satisfied with your eating experience, you will find that you eat far less food. Conversely, if you are unsatisfied, you will likely eat more and be on the prowl, regardless of your satiety level. For example, one client, Fran, wanted a piece of cornbread with lunch, but she fastidiously refrained from eating it. Fran thought about having cornbread with dinner, but again stopped herself. That night she ate 6 Weight Watchers desserts, and realized that what she was really seeking was cornbread. No amount of diet desserts would satisfy her cornbread craving. Ironically, the calories from the diet desserts far exceeded the calories from a single piece of cornbread. When Fran was eating the diet desserts, she was chasing her phantom food, trying to fill the void created by denying the satisfaction factor from the food she originally wanted to eat. The wisdom of pleasure. Americans have gotten so focused on the alchemy of foods, whether as an adjunct to lose weight or seek health, that we have neglected a very important role that eating plays in our lives, provision of pleasure. The Japanese promote pleasure as one of their goals of healthy eating. Make all activities pertaining to food and eating pleasurable ones, is one of their dietary guidelines for health promotion. How ironic this advice is for Americans, especially dieters, who have come to see food as the enemy and the eating experience as the battleground between tempting foods and the willpower to avoid them. Most dieters with whom we work have lost sight of how important it is to have a satisfying, let alone pleasurable, eating experience. For some, any experience that smacks of pleasure triggers feelings of guilt and wrongdoing. It's not too surprising, since we live in a society with strong puritanical roots and a tradition of self-denial. Dieting plays right into the puritanical ethic. Make sacrifices, settle for less. Yet, if you settle for food that is inferior, it will often leave you wanting, eating, overeating. Jill is an example of a young woman who let the fear of eating pleasurable foods turn her into a restrictive eater. Her food choices were based primarily on their weight-reducing powers. She was convinced that if she even tasted a pleasurable food, she would never again be able to control herself. Every time that Jill was in a dieting phase, she would find herself having strong cravings for forbidden foods. She chased her phantom food, searching for a food that would quell her cravings. If she craved a chocolate cookie, she would spread sugar-free jam on fat-free saltines. When that didn't satisfy her, she'd go on to cinnamon-flavored rice cakes, then to fat-free, healthy cookies, which she disliked since they tasted like sweetened cardboard, and lots of dried fruit. By the end of an evening, Jill had eaten 10 times more diet foods than she would have eaten had she just allowed herself to have the chocolate cookie. And, not surprisingly, she would usually succumb to the chocolate cookie anyway at the end of her frustrating food chase. After learning the intuitive eating process, Jill quit the phantom food searches and allowed herself to eat what she really wanted. She can now even order a hamburger with fries and finds that she ends up leaving half of her food because she's so satisfied. She's also found that she eats plenty of nutritious food along with enough play food to satisfy her whole spectrum of taste cravings. Don't be afraid to enjoy your food. Like Jill, our clients are initially afraid that if they let the pleasure of eating into their lives, they might continue to seek food in an uncontrollable fashion. Yet letting yourself enjoy food will actually result in self-limiting rather than out-of-control eating. Remember, as we explained in Chapter 7, deprivation is a key factor that leads to backlash eating. Satisfied now, eat less later. For many of our clients, feeling a sense of satisfaction in a meal actually decreases their yearning for foods at a later time. We have had our clients compare having a full-course meal for dinner with just picking or scrounging. When they take the time to prepare a meal that attracts their sense of smell, taste, sight, and so forth, they invariably report a feeling of satisfaction and a decreased need for more food later in the evening. Those who come home and drop on the sofa with a box of crackers and a soda find themselves getting up at each commercial for yet another snack. They feel that they haven't really eaten and never seem to get satisfied. By the end of the evening, they feel overfull and frustrated. Kelly is a busy person who often neglects her own needs. Sometimes she'll be so busy with work and her child that she doesn't stop to prepare an entire meal for herself. On the days when she takes the time to figure out what she really wants to eat and ends up eating exactly what she wants for lunch or dinner, she finds that she has no desire for dessert. On the days when she diets all day and never feels satisfied, her dessert cravings at night are insatiable. When you allow yourself pleasure and satisfaction from every possible eating experience, your total quantity of food will decrease. How to regain your pleasure in eating. As a result of dieting and the fear of giving it up, dieters have lost their pleasure in eating, and they don't know how to get it back. Here are the steps we use with our clients to help them achieve pleasure and satisfaction in their eating. Step 1, ask yourself what you really want to eat. Satisfaction is derived when you take the time to figure out what you really want to eat. Give yourself unconditional permission to eat, and then eat in a relaxing, enjoyable atmosphere. The problem for most dieters with whom we've worked is that they have figured out so many tricks to avoid eating that they no longer know what they like to eat. When you're about to begin a new diet, have you ever asked yourself what you feel like eating? That thought rarely enters a dieter's mind. After all, the basic premise of dieting is to be told what to eat. Why would you begin to question your own needs? Such was the case with a 40-year-old woman, Jennifer, who had been overweight and dieting all of her life. As a child, she was put on diets by her mother and her doctors. When Jennifer first visited my office, she belligerently stated that she didn't want to hear another word about dieting. She had only come because her doctor had insisted, and she emphatically stated that she knew all there was to know about dieting. I told her that I didn't believe in dieting, but all I really wanted to know was what she liked to eat. Astonishment crossed her face. She could hardly respond. But when she did, she told me that no one in her entire life had ever asked her what she wanted to eat. She had been on diets since she was a child and had always been told what she should eat. She went deep into thought for a few moments and then said that she had no idea what she liked. In fact, this morbidly obese woman wasn't even sure if she liked food at all. At the end of the session, I suggested that Jennifer spend the next week experimenting with food so that she could learn more about her taste preferences. During that week, Jennifer could only find 10 foods that she actually liked and discovered that she could do without the rest. The following week, Jennifer's task was to eat only those 10 foods and see how much she actually consumed. Again, she was surprised by the results. When she ate what she liked, she found that she was satisfied by much less, and that her total food intake that week was lower than it had been in years. One night, all she had for dinner was a scoop of chocolate ice cream. In the past, she would gulp down a huge dinner of foods she thought she should eat, even though she wasn't very hungry, and would then finish the half gallon of ice cream because she felt guilty about having any of it. Jennifer was on her way to becoming an intuitive eater. In addition to appreciating that she could have exactly what she wanted any time that she ate, she realized that eating when she was hungry would give her the most satisfaction. As a result of this revelation, she found herself eating only when she was hungry. She also found that eating past comfortable fullness was pointless, as the food no longer tasted good, her body felt miserable, and she could eat the same food again at her next meal if she liked. Soon it became automatic for her to eat smaller quantities than she ever had in her life. Since she felt good for the first time in her life, she was motivated to begin a program of regular swimming, not because she had to, but because she wanted to feel even better physically. Her obesity had led to problems with her knees and virtual inactivity. As her weight began to normalize, Jennifer felt continually satisfied by her meals without feeling deprived. If you also have trouble figuring out what you truly like to eat, the next step will give you clarification. Step 2. Discover the pleasure of the palate. Our clients are focused on every aspect of food except the here and now. They lament the past and worry about the future. What will I eat? How will I work off these calories? But very rarely do they focus on the actual experience of eating. Therefore, they are not tasting, not experiencing, or savoring food. It's almost as if the art of eating needs to be relearned without bias. The sensual qualities of food. To discover what foods you really like and how to increase satisfaction in your eating, explore the sensual qualities of food. For most people, this means a conscious period of experimentation. Take your taste buds and palate for a sensory joyride. Before you eat, consider. Taste. Put a particular food in your mouth to see which of your taste sensations gets stimulated. Roll the food on your tongue to see if it's predominantly sweet, salty, sour, or bitter. Is that taste pleasant, neutral, or maybe even offensive? Try this experiment at various times during the day to see if certain tastes are more pleasurable at different times. Some people are drawn to the sweet taste at breakfast and want waffles or pancakes. Something spicy, such as eggs with salsa, might be a turnoff early in the morning. Others can't think of something sweet until later in the afternoon. Texture. As you roll the food on your tongue and begin to chew it, experience the various types of textures that foods can provide. How does crunchy feel to you? Is it abrasive to have to break into a crunchy food, or is it a satisfying experience? What reaction do you have to a food that is smooth or creamy? Does it remind you of baby food? And is that appealing or annoying? Some foods are chewy and require a lot of work by your teeth and tongue. What is that like for you? Sometimes you might just want the flow of a liquid through your mouth and down your throat. Certain food textures might be appealing at different times of the day, or even on different days. Aroma. Sometimes the aroma of a food will have more of an effect on your desire for it than does its taste or texture. Appreciate the various aromas that foods can emit. Walk by the bakery and smell the yeasty bread coming out of the oven, or inhale the coffee vapors as the coffee is dripping through the filter. If the aroma of a food is not appealing, you probably won't get your optimal satisfaction from it. If it smells great to you as it is cooking or served to you, however, it will probably increase your satisfaction. Appearance. Food artists who design commercial food sets or menus for restaurants know that foods that look appealing are alluring and make a person want to try them. Take a look at the food you're about to eat. Is it attractive to your eye? Is it fresh looking? Is its color interesting to you? Imagine a plate with a poached chicken breast, a boiled potato, and cauliflower. Not too thrilling. You'll probably get less satisfaction from that meal than one that's more exciting to look at. Temperature. A steamy bowl of soup might be just the order of the day if it's cold and rainy outside. But chilly frozen yogurt is not usually desirable when you're shivering under an umbrella. Ask yourself what is the most appealing temperature of your foods. Do you like your hot foods boiling hot or temperate? Do you like your cold drinks with lots of ice or very little? Or is room temperature just fine for you for everything? Volume or filling capacity. Some foods are light and airy, while others are heavy and filling. The filling capacity of your food choices can make a difference in how much food you need to satisfy you or how you feel after you've finished eating. Some days you might only be satisfied by a plate of pasta, which fills your stomach, while at other times a lighter salad is more appealing. Even if something tastes and feels great on your tongue and in your mouth, if it makes your stomach feel queasy or too full, it will diminish the satisfying experience. Respect your individual taste buds. Keep in mind that everyone has a different experience with taste and texture sensations. Not all foods will be desirable to you. People may rave about the best sushi in town. However, the thought of eating raw fish might be intolerable to you. If you have gotten sick on corn, regardless of the cause, corn might never seem appealing again. Your preferences may be lifelong or may change from time to time. Keep in touch with what is appetizing to you so that you can choose what is most satisfying. Think about what you really feel like eating. Once you've gone through this hyperconscious experimentation with the sensory qualities of food, the next time you feel like a meal or a snack, take a few moments to decide what you really want for a meal or snack. If you have trouble deciding what to eat or need a little clarity, ask yourself, what do I feel like eating? What food aroma might appeal to me? How will the food look to my eye? How will the food taste and feel in my mouth? Do I want something sweet, salty, sour, or even slightly bitter? Do I want something crunchy, smooth, creamy, soft, lumpy, fluid, etc.? Do I want something hot, cold, or moderate? Do I want something light, airy, heavy, filling, or in between? How will my stomach feel when I'm finished eating? If you have a general knowledge of your taste preferences, it will lead you to the right place on the menu or in the supermarket. Checking in with yourself before a meal will give you the specifics of the moment. A further critical key to finding satisfaction in your eating is to take a time out after you've had a few bites of your food. Is the taste and texture consistent with your desire? Is the food satisfying enough to eat? If you continue to eat a food just because it's there, despite the fact that it's unappealing, you'll only end up feeling unsatisfied when you're finished and find yourself on the prowl for something else that will satisfy you. Step 3. Make your eating experience more enjoyable. Savor your food. Europeans seem to have a market on slow, sensual eating experiences. Businesses often shut down temporarily to allow for a long, lingering lunch, so the meal can be savored and appreciated. Friends tend to gather together to enjoy the conversation and the food. Americans, on the other hand, often engage in desktop dining, 15 minutes if you're lucky, while going over notes for a meeting, or zip through the fast food drive-thru while racing to pick up the kids from school. Who do you think has the most satisfying meal experience? Alice is an executive in a company that stresses high productivity. Taking time to sit down for lunch is unheard of, and she's so anxious to get into the office in the morning to begin her calls to the East Coast that she never allows herself to eat breakfast at home before she leaves. By the time Alice gets home in the evening, the frenetic pace of her day has become a part of her. She ends up gulping down her entire dinner before her husband and daughter get through their salads. When you race through your meals, as Alice does, you don't give yourself the opportunity to experience the sensual aspects of your food. You don't have time to appreciate the attractiveness of the different colors and shapes of the food. You can barely take in their aromas or feel their textures on your tongue and teeth, let alone taste. To help you savor your food and get more satisfaction from your meals, make time to appreciate your food. Give yourself a distinct time allowance for a meal. Even 15 minutes is better than nothing. Sit down at the table or your desk. Standing at the refrigerator or walking around decreases attention and satisfaction. Take several deep breaths before you begin to eat. Deep breathing helps to calm and center you so you can be focused on eating slowly. Pay attention to eating as slowly as you can. Remember that your taste buds are on your tongue, not in your stomach. Gobbling your food takes away your chance to really taste it. Taste each bite of food that you put in your mouth. Experience the different taste and texture sensations that the food can provide. Put your fork down now and then throughout the meal. This will help to slow you down. Remember Principle 5, feel your fullness. Take a time out in the midst of the meal to check your fullness level. See Chapter 9. Food won't taste as good or be as satisfying after you've reached the last bite threshold. Finally, remember the 3 S's of satisfying eating. Eat slowly, eat sensually, and savor every bite. Eat when gently hungry rather than when over-hungry. If you sit down for a meal when you're so hungry that you could eat a cow, you won't be able to sense the difference between a delicious steak and the cow itself. If you're over-hungry, your biological need for energy supersedes your ability to eat slowly and taste what's before you. Likewise, if you begin to eat when you aren't really hungry, it can be difficult to decide whether what you're eating is really what you want, and whether it's satisfying. When you're not very hungry, food is not as compelling. If you find this is true for you, this may be a sign that you're not ready to eat just yet. Wait a little while, until your hunger is somewhat more obvious, and you'll find that you'll have an easier time getting in touch with what you really want to eat. Eat in a pleasant environment, when possible. Most people find that they get the greatest satisfaction from their meals by eating them in a pleasing setting. Restaurants spend a great deal of time and money creating environments that are appealing and will draw people back again and again. The aesthetics of a restaurant can be as important as the taste of the food. At home, the same thing goes. If you set your table in a pleasing manner, a placemat or tablecloth, pretty china, and so forth, your food enjoyment will increase. But eating while standing or driving can diminish satisfaction. If you eat in the car, you are distracted by the traffic and by balancing food on your lap. Avoid tension. Keep heated fights off limits at the table. One of the surest ways to decrease your satisfaction in eating is to try to eat when you're having an argument with a family member or friend. You'll probably end up eating faster and might even use your chewing as a way to show your anger. You definitely won't have your focus on the food and might eat everything before you without even noticing it. Not a satisfying experience. Provide variety. Eating a variety of foods is not only nutritionally wise, but it will give you a much broader and more satisfying eating experience. Many clients take pride in keeping empty refrigerators and barren cupboards. They believe that if certain foods aren't around, they'll be less tempted to overeat. The reality is that a lack of appealing food choices creates a sense of deprivation and promotes a creative food foraging experience that never seems to produce a satisfying result. Give yourself the gift of keeping a variety of foods around, from soups to pastas to cookies or fruits and vegetables. You never know what you might feel like eating. Finding satisfaction in your eating will be a futile attempt if what you want isn't there. Step 4. Don't settle. You are not obligated to finish eating a food just because you took a bite of it. Yet, how often have you tasted what appeared to be a mouth-watering dessert, only to discover it was mediocre? And yet, you kept on eating. One of the biggest assets of being an intuitive eater is the ability to toss aside food that isn't to your liking. This can be easily done when you are truly tasting and experiencing food, combined with the knowledge that you can eat whatever you want again. For the most part, adopt the motto, if you don't love it, don't eat it. And if you love it, savor it. Order something else. Find something different in the refrigerator. Or eat the parts of the meal that you like and leave the rest. For example, Barbara spoke of a meal served to her at a banquet that was comprised of salad, chicken, vegetables, and pasta. She took just one taste of the salad and left the rest when she found that the lettuce was soggy under a sea of dressing that she didn't like. The chicken and pasta were delicious, so she ate most of them. The vegetables were so buttery that they overwhelmed her taste buds, so she left them on the plate. In her old diet days, she would have eaten only the salad and vegetables, thinking that was the diet way to do it, and would have left her meal unsatisfied, only to go home to search for something else to eat. Melody is another client who is learning to discard what she doesn't find satisfying. One of Melody's favorite foods is a trademark muffin at a local restaurant. Every time she goes to the restaurant, she savors her muffin and feels satisfied. One day, Melody got the inspired notion to bake the trademark muffins from the restaurant's prepared mix. And bake she did. When she took a bite of the freshly baked muffin, she was sadly disappointed. It didn't taste anything like what she had eaten in the restaurant. Melody's connection with her intuitive eating allowed her to throw out the muffins, with a conviction that she would only eat them when she could get the real thing. Step 5. Check in. Does it still taste good? Have you ever eaten a whole bag of cookies or a whole carton of Häagen-Dazs? If so, you can probably attest to the fact that the first couple of cookies or spoonfuls of ice cream tasted much better than those at the bottom of the barrel. Even the taste satisfaction of a large apple dwindles by the time you get down to the core. In studies of hedonics to food cues, hedonics is the branch of psychology dealing with pleasurable and unpleasurable feelings, researchers find that continued exposure to the same food results in a decrease of desire for that food. Researchers call this concept sensory-specific satiety. It does not take many bites of food to reach taste satisfaction. Sensory-specific satiety is defined as a decrease in the subjective liking for a food that is eaten. This decline occurs within minutes of eating a particular food, which is highly influenced by the sensory aspects of food, such as flavor, texture, or aroma. We also see that in our clients. Try your own hedonic experiment. Rate the taste pleasure you get from the first few bites of a food from 1 to 10, 1 being the least pleasurable and 10 being the most. Then stop halfway through the food and check your taste buds. Finally, rate the food when you're down to the last bite. You're likely to find that the numbers diminish along with the food. Routinely check in with yourself to see if the food tastes as good as it did when you started. If it doesn't, consider stopping, as your satisfaction level is diminishing by the biteful. Wait until you're hungry again. Food will taste better, and you'll be more satisfied. And remember, no one is going to take that food away from your eating repertoire. You can have it for the rest of your life. So why waste your time and your food on a less than satisfying experience? It doesn't have to be perfect. We've discussed how taking the time to figure out what you really want to eat and eating in a favorable environment can lead you to more pleasurable, satisfying eating experiences. But what if this isn't always possible? There will be times when you don't have the option to get exactly what you want. You might be served a meal at a friend's or relative's house that offers little to say for it. Many a client has bemoaned meals made by a mother-in-law or an old friend who might boil the vegetables until unrecognizable or cook the chicken until it's the texture of an old shoe. At those times, remember the concept of thinking in the gray rather than in black and white. See Chapter 8. Intuitive eating is not a process that seeks perfection, but one that offers guidelines to a comfortable relationship with food. Remember, most of your eating experiences will be more satisfying and pleasurable than you've experienced in years of diets. After all, it's only one meal. You will survive. It's how you jump back into taking care of yourself afterward that makes the difference. Sometimes, honoring your hunger is the best you can do. And for many of our patients, that alone is significant progress. But if survival eating occupies most of your experiences with food, your satisfaction factor will most likely be low. Reclaim your right to pleasurable, satisfying eating. If dieting has been a significant part of your life for many years, you may need to make a serious commitment to reclaim your right to enjoy your food. You may have been so programmed to eat what you were told, especially foods that have little taste pleasure, that you hardly know where to begin to find satisfaction. Knowing what you like to eat and believing that you have the right to enjoy food are key factors in a lifetime of maintaining normal weight without dieting. If it takes you some time to accomplish all of this, be patient. After all, it's taken you many years to lose your ability to truly enjoy eating. Distracted versus mindless eating. There seems to be a common perception that mindless eating is a condition in which you have no idea that you just ate, akin to eating amnesia. Many of our clients eat while distracted, but don't consider themselves mindless eaters because they are aware that they are eating while engaging in another activity, such as watching television. Similarly, most car drivers would not readily identify themselves as mindless drivers because they are aware that they are driving. However, if you describe someone as a distracted driver, it conjures up a clearer image, such as driving while talking on the cell phone or while applying makeup. The problem, we believe, is a terminology issue. Unless you are trained in mindfulness, the description of distracted, rather than mindless, seems to resonate with more people. A recent study makes a good case about the effect of distraction on eating. Distracted eating study. Scientists divided people into two groups. The distracted group ate lunch while playing a computer game of solitaire. The non-distracted group ate the same type of lunch, but without the same distraction condition. The study's findings showed that distraction made a significant impact on the eating experience, both qualitatively and quantitatively. When compared to the non-distracted group, the distracted people ate faster, couldn't remember what they ate more snacks, reported feeling significantly less full. The research also showed that distraction during a meal influenced meal size later in the day. Satisfaction and satiety affected by distraction. We are living in such a multitasking, high-urgency era that even when not pressed for time, it seems that many people are in the routine of eating while distracted. The distracted conditions in the study are similar to how our clients eat, such as eating while checking email, texting, surfing the internet, tweeting. You get the idea. The irony of eating while distracted is that you end up missing out on the eating experience, which often means that eating needs to be repeated. This is akin to having a phone conversation with a friend while you are checking email. You might respond to the conversation at the right times, but something is missing. There is a disconnect. And usually the person on the other line can tell you are not 100% there. In the case of distracted eating, it is your body that knows. Artificial sweeteners. Artificial sweetener consumption has steadily risen since 1980. Currently, there are over 4,000 foods which contain one or more artificial sweeteners, ranging from baby food to frozen foods and beverages. People often assume that using artificially sweetened foods and drinks will help them lose weight. Yet research suggests that the opposite may occur. A recent scientific review describes how consuming artificial sweeteners may lead to weight gain. Artificial sweeteners may increase appetite because they result in less satisfaction in eating. Calorie-free sweeteners offer only partial but not complete activation of the food reward pathways in the brain. This incomplete activation of the reward may contribute to increased food-seeking behavior. Artificially sweetened foods may encourage sugar cravings. The more often that someone is exposed to a flavor, the more this flavor becomes a preference. For example, people who are used to very salty foods often find unsalted foods to be bland and unfavorable. Similarly, people who use artificial sweeteners become accustomed to the intensely sweet taste of artificially sweetened foods and beverages. This repeated exposure can lead to an increased preference for an unnaturally sweet taste. People tend to see artificially sweetened foods as lower in calories than foods that are naturally sweet or foods sweetened with sugar, leading them to overeat these foods. Chapter 11, Principle 7. Cope with your emotions without using food. Find ways to comfort, nurture, distract, and resolve your issues without using food. Anxiety, loneliness, boredom, and anger are emotions we all experience throughout life. Each has its own trigger, and each has its own appeasement. Food won't fix any of these feelings. It may comfort for the short term, distract from the pain, or even numb you into a food hangover. But food won't solve the problem. If anything, eating for an emotional hunger will only make you feel worse in the long run. You'll ultimately have to deal with the source of the emotion, as well as the discomfort of overeating. Eating doesn't occur in a void. Regardless of your weight, food usually has emotional associations. If you have any doubt, catch a glimpse of food commercials. They push our eating buttons, not through our stomachs, but through the emotional connection. They imply that in 60 seconds or less, you can capture romance with an intimate cup of coffee, bake someone happy, reward yourself with a rich dessert. Eating can be one of the most emotionally laden experiences that we have in our lives. The emotional rhythm to eating is set from the first day that the infant is offered the breast or the bottle to quell his crying. It's then reinforced each time a cookie is offered to soothe a scraped knee or ice cream is eaten to celebrate a Little League victory. Nearly every culture and religion uses food as an important symbolic custom, from the American Thanksgiving feast to the Jewish Passover Seder. Each time a significant life experience is celebrated with food, the emotional connection deepens, from the I got the promotion dinner celebration to the annual birthday cake. Likewise, each time food is used for a little wound licking or comfort, the emotional bond strengthens. Food is love. Food is comfort. Food is reward. Food is a reliable friend. And sometimes food becomes your only friend in moments of pain and loneliness. Our patients are embarrassed that food can become so important, that food is their best friend. But if you consider how emotionally charged food is, it's no surprise that food can evolve into a special salve. When a dieter overeats during rough emotional times, whether periodically or chronically, it is usually obvious that food is used as a coping mechanism. For other dieters, it is not so clear. Some of our clients are emotionally unaware. They have not yet learned to identify their feelings. It may not be obvious to them that they are using food to cope. Sometimes these clients don't know why they are eating. Often the why is an uncomfortable feeling that has not been discovered. Or they may be engaged in a subtle form of emotional eating, such as boredom eating. Nibbling to kill time between classes or appointments is not emotionally charged. But the results can be the same as using food to numb strong feelings, overeating. The eating experience itself, especially overeating, evokes feelings, and those feelings can affect your ability to eat normally. Some of the most detrimental feelings that overeating can stir up are guilt and shame. When our clients say, "I feel guilty because I ate blank," we ask these questions. Did you steal that food? Or did you steal money to get that food? They look aghast and emphatically declare, "Of course not." Feelings of guilt imply a crime or moral code was violated. Guilt may be an appropriate emotion when you have hurt another person or committed a crime. But guilt has no place in your eating world. Studies have shown that although you might have immediate emotional comfort from eating, the negative rush of guilt that bursts forth is powerful enough to completely wipe out the relief. If you replace the guilt with feelings of self-compassion, You'll be freed to concentrate on your underlying issues and find ways to understand them and deal with them. Becoming an intuitive eater means learning to be gentle with yourself about how you use food to cope and letting go of the guilt. As odd as this may sound, eating may have been the only coping mechanism you had to get through difficult times in your life. It may also have been an inevitable result of years of dieting and feelings of deprivation and despair that arose from dieting. Dieting itself can trigger emotions, which ultimately lead to using food to cope with these feelings. Chalk up another vicious cycle due to dieting. The continuum of emotional eating. Food can be used to cope with feelings in a myriad of ways. Using food in this way is not a component of biological hunger, but of emotional hunger. Emotional eating is triggered by feelings, such as boredom or anger, not by hunger. These feelings can trigger anything from a benign nibble to an out-of-control binge. It's important to understand that this coping mechanism lies on a continuum of intensity that begins at one end with mild, almost universal sensory eating, to the opposite end with numbing, often anesthetizing eating. Sensory gratification. The mildest and most common feeling that food can call forth is pleasure. The significance of receiving pleasure from eating is emphasized in Principle 6, Discover the Satisfaction Factor. This concept is not only critical to intuitive eating, but is a normal, natural part of living. Don't underestimate the importance of pleasing your palate. As we explained in Chapter 10, by letting yourself enjoy and appreciate eating, you will actually reduce the amount of food you need to feel satisfied when biologically hungry. For example, allowing yourself to truly taste all of the special foods that appeal to you at Thanksgiving without restriction will usually offset overeating. Comfort. Just the thought of certain foods has the ability to evoke feelings from a comfortable time or place. For example, do you ever crave chicken soup when you are sick? Or macaroni and cheese on dreary days because that's what your mom fixed on these occasions? Those are examples of comfort foods. It's normal to have a repertoire of comfort foods. If you want to curl up with a blanket in front of a fireplace and sip hot cocoa with your dinner, that's fine. Occasionally, eating comfort foods can be part of a healthy relationship with food, if you do it while staying in touch with your satiety levels and without guilt. If, however, food is the first and only thing that comes to mind to take care of you when you are feeling sad, lonely, or uncomfortable, it can become a destructive coping mechanism. Distraction. If you go a little further on the continuum of emotional eating, food can be used to distract you from feelings you choose not to experience. Using food to cope in this way can become troublesome, as it can be a seductive behavior that blocks your ability to detect your intuitive signals. It also can inhibit you from discovering the source of the feelings and taking care of your true needs. Whether you're the teenager who sits in front of the TV with a bag of chips to distract you from the feelings of boredom in doing your homework, or you're the executive who goes through a whole bowl of peanuts on your desk to distract you from the anxiety of an arduous meeting, this kind of eating needs to be confronted. There is nothing wrong with occasionally wanting to distract yourself from feelings. Experiencing your feelings 24 hours a day can be tedious and overwhelming. But food is not the appropriate distractor for temporary relief. Sedation. A more serious form of using food to cope is eating for the purpose of numbing or anesthetizing. One client calls this form of eating a food coma. Another suggests that this kind of eating results in a food hangover. In either case, Eating to sedate yourself can be as emotionally dangerous as using drugs or alcohol for this purpose. It keeps you from experiencing any feeling for extended periods of time. It becomes impossible to sense your intuitive signals of hunger and satiety, and it deprives you of the satisfying experience that food can bring to your life. Most clients who use food in this way talk about feeling out of control, out of touch with life, and generally zoned out. They also have trouble recognizing basic sensations of hunger and fullness. Connie is a young woman who had an abusive childhood. She learned to use food at a very early age as a numbing agent. She continues to sedate herself through the anxiety, fear, and sadness of her present life. Connie's weight can escalate dramatically when she is regularly going into her food comas. But even more frightening than her weight gain is the complete detachment from life that she experiences each time. She isolates from her friends, calls in sick to work, and feels completely helpless about life itself. Connie is learning to utilize other coping tools so that she can improve the quality of her life. When eating to numb and sedate is occasional and short run, it tends to have little detrimental effect. But this kind of eating can escalate into a habitual behavior before you hardly notice. Punishment. Sometimes, eating for the purpose of sedation becomes so frequent and intense that self-blame ensues and ultimately triggers punishing behaviors. Clients find themselves eating large quantities of food in an angry, forceful manner that allows them to feel beaten up. This is the most severe form of emotional eating and can lead to loss of self-esteem and self-hatred. Clients who use food to punish themselves report no pleasure in their eating and actually begin to hate food. Fortunately, this type of eating behavior disappears when the nurturer voice can be beckoned to give understanding and compassion. If there's no crime committed, no punishment need be tendered. Emotional triggers. We've looked at general emotional reasons for eating. Now let's examine the specific feelings involved. A craving for certain foods or simply a desire to eat can be triggered by a variety of feelings and situations. Some people use food to cope when they have no idea that's what they're doing. They think that they're overeating just because it tastes good and deny or minimize that they're eating emotionally. If you find that you're doing quite a bit of eating when you're not biologically hungry, then there's a good chance that you are using food to cope. You may not have deep-seated emotional reasons to eat, but just getting through life's hassles with some of its irksome tasks and boredom might trigger you to seek food to make it all easier. The best way to gauge whether you're using food in this way is to ask yourself the following question. If my body only needs a certain amount of food to feel satisfied, but I continue to eat after I'm full, then what other need am I trying to fill with food? You may discover that the food is taking care of some of the feelings mentioned in the following. Boredom and procrastination. One of the most common reasons that our clients eat when they're not hungry is boredom. In fact, studies have shown that regardless of a person's weight, boredom is one of the most common triggers of emotional eating. One particular study divided college students into two groups. One group had the monotonous task of writing the same letters over and over again for nearly half an hour. The other group was engaged in a stimulating writing project. Students in each group were given a bowl of crackers to nibble on. Guess which group ate more? Regardless of weight, the bored group ate the most crackers. In boredom eating, food is used as a way to fill time as well as a way to put off doing mundane work. For some people, the thought of the food and the actual experience of going for it and eating it breaks the tedium. Here are some situations that produce boredom eating. Lying around the house on a Sunday afternoon when you've made no plans for the day. having to get through an afternoon of studying, paperwork, or a writing project. Watching a boring night of television with nothing else to do but take food breaks.